the sofa.
And that's Toad and that's Dino.
And there goes the limit of Britt Marie's well-meaningness.
Oh, for goodness sake, those aren't even proper names.
Vega doesn't look as if she understands what this is supposed to mean.
It's because he's a Somalian, she says, pointing at one of the boys as if this explains everything.
When Britt Marie doesn't look as if it does explain everything, Vega sighs in a very bored sort of way and explains.
When Dino moved to Borg and Omar heard that he was a Somalian, he thought it sounded like a sommelier, you know, one of those people who drink wine on the TV. So we called him Wino, and it rhymes with Dino, so now we just call him Dino.
Britt Marie stares at Vega as if Vega had just fallen asleep drunk in Britt Marie's bed.
So your real names weren't good enough, I suppose, were they?
Vega doesn't seem to comprehend the difference.
He can't have the same name as us, can he? Or we wouldn't know who to pass to when we're playing.
Britt Marie snorts hard through her nose because that's how Britt Marie's irritation comes steaming out when it grows too large inside her head.
Surely the boy has a proper name, she fumes.
Vega shrugs.
He didn't do much talking when he moved here, so we didn't know what his name was. But he laughed when we called him Dino, and we liked it when he laughed, so he kept the name. Toad, we called Toad because he can burp so loud that it's just sick. And Pirate, we call Pirate because we... I don't know, we just do.
She nods towards the ginger-haired boy, who still can't be seen. Britt Marie smiles graciously and says,
And I don't suppose there are any girls' teams for you to play in?
No, of course not. Vega shakes her head.
All the girls play for the team in town.
Britt Marie nods with absolute, absolute helpfulness.
I suppose that team wasn't good enough for you, was it?
Vega looks annoyed.
This is my team, she says.
A player on the TV lies rolling about on the pitch. Omar uses the stoppage time to climb up on one of the kitchen stools and start changing the light bulbs on credit. Britt Marie circles nervously. Vega starts looking around as if there's a person missing.
Where's the ball?
She calls out into the room.
Shit, outside!
Omar cries, looking out at the rain outside the window.
You can't possibly be thinking about bringing that ball in here,
gasps Britt Marie in terror.
It can't just stay out there in the rain,
says Vega, with a similar level of terror in her voice, as if this was a question of a human life. Before Britt Marie has time to realise what's going on, a chain of stones and scissors being put in paper bags is initiated across the room until ginger-haired Pirate in some way loses and is on his way up from the sofa towards the door in a fluid movement.
Mother of God, not in your newly washed jersey, no!
She catches hold of his collar, but he's already wearing his shoes and has already gone over the threshold. Britt Marie, in absolute agitation, gets into her own shoes and runs after him. The boy is standing 2 metres away with the muddy football in his arms.
Sorry, he mumbles, staring down at the leather.
Britt Marie doesn't know if he's apologising to her or to the football. She holds her hands over her hair so the rain doesn't ruin her coiffure. The boy peers at her, smiling sincerely and then, embarrassed, looks down at the ground.
Can I ask you something? He says.
Excuse me? Says Britt Marie, the rain running down her face.
Would you help me fix my hair?
He mumbles, avoiding eye contact.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Asks Britt Marie while she keeps her gaze focused on a patch of mud left by the football on the boy's newly washed jersey.
Have a date tomorrow. I wanted to ask if you could help me fix my hair, he manages to say.
Britt Marie nods as if this was quite typical.
I don't suppose you have any hairdressers in Borg, oh no.
I suppose that will also be my responsibility now, is that what you mean, is it? The boy shakes his head at the ball.
Your hair's really nice. I was thinking you're good at doing hair because your hair is nice. There isn't a hairdresser in Borg because it closed down.
The rain tails off somewhat. Britt Marie is still holding the palms of her hands like a pitched roof over the top of her head. And the rain is running down into her sleeves.
Is that what it's known as these days?
A date, she says, a touch thoughtfully.
What did you call it before?
Asks the boy, peering up from the ball. In my days it was known as a meeting, says Britt Marie firmly. Possibly she's not an expert at this, she'd be willing to admit. She has only ever been for 2 meetings with boys. One of them she ended up marrying. The rain stops completely while they're standing there, she and the boy with the ginger hair and the muddy football.
We say date, or at least I do, mumbles the boy.
Britt Marie takes a deep breath and avoids his avoidance of eye contact. You really must understand that I can't give you an answer now because I have my list in my handbag, she says in a low voice. The boy immediately starts nodding with altogether worrying enthusiasm.
It doesn't matter, I can make it any time tomorrow.
Ha! Huh. I imagine school isn't of much concern here in Borg.
It's still Christmas holiday.
And then their silence is so abruptly broken by the children's howls of euphoria from within that Britt Marie is startled and makes a grab for the boy's jersey, and the boy in turn is so surprised that he tosses the ball into her arms. She gets mud on her jacket. Half a second later, the men in the pizzeria burst into fits of braying until the neon sign above the door rattles.
What's going on?
Britt Marie wants to know, with panic in her eyes, as she throws the ball on the ground.
We scored a goal!
Howls the pirate boy ecstatically.
What do you mean, we? Asks Britt Marie. Our team!
I thought you didn't have a team.
But I mean, our team, the one we're supporting on the TV,
the boy tries to explain.
But how is it your team if you don't play in it?
The boy thinks this over for a moment. Then he seems to take a firmer grip on the ball.
We've supported this team for longer than most of the players in it, so it's more our team than theirs.
Preposterous, snorts Britt Marie. In the next second, the sound of a front door being slammed cuts through the January night. Britt Marie spins around in pure dismay and starts running towards it. The boy runs after. The door is locked from the inside.
Like, they've locked it so we can't come in because we were out here when they scored,
puffs Pirate, jubilant and out of breath.
What on earth are you trying to say?
Britt Marie demands and tugs frantically at the door handle.
I mean, it's important that we stay out here because while we were out here, we scored. We're bringing good luck out here,
hollers the boy as if that's reasonable. Britt Marie stares at him as if it certainly isn't. But then they stand in the parking area despite the rain that's falling again, and Britt Marie doesn't say anything else. Because it's the first time, in an absolute age, that anyone has told Britt Marie it's important for her to be somewhere. Football is a curious game in that way, because it doesn't ask to be loved. Chapter 11. The children open the door at half-time to let Britt Marie and Pirate back in. Britt Marie spends the second half in front of the mirror in the bathroom, firstly because she doesn't want to come out and risk having to talk to any of the children, and secondly because their team scores again so they forbid her from coming out until the match is over. So Britt Marie stays in there and dries her hair and brings them luck and has a life crisis. It's possible to do all of these things at the same time. Her mirror image belongs to someone else, someone whose face has been touched by many winters. The winters have always been the worst, both for the balcony plants and for Britt Marie. It's the silence that Britt Marie struggles most of all to live with, because while immersed in silence you don't know if anyone knows you're there, and winter is also the quiet season because the cold insulates people, makes the world soundless. It was the silence that paralysed Britt Marie when Ingrid died. Her father started coming home later and later from his work, and at a certain point he started to come home so late that Britt Marie would already be asleep by the time he walked in. Then she woke up one morning, and he was only just coming home. And in the end she woke up one morning, and he hadn't come home at all. Her mother said less and less about it, stayed in bed for longer and longer in the mornings. Britt Marie meandered around the flat as children do when they have to live in silent worlds. Once she knocked over a vase just so her mother would yell at her from the bedroom. Her mother didn't yell. Britt Marie swept up the glass herself and never knocked over a vase again. The next day her mother stayed in bed until Britt Marie had made dinner. The day after that she got up even later and in the end, she didn't get up at all. Of course, several of her mother's girlfriends sent beautiful flowers and condolences, but they were too busy with their lives to pay their respects to someone who was anyway already dead. Britt Marie cut little notches in the flower stalks and put them in newly washed vases. She cleaned the flat and polished all the windows, and the day after, when she took out the rubbish, she met Kent on the stairs. They stared at one another as children who have turned into adults tend to do. He had been married with two children, but he had recently been divorced and had now come back to the house to visit his mother. He smiled when he saw Britt Marie, because in those days he used to see her. Britt Marie rubs her ring finger in front of the mirror. The white line there is like a tattoo, taunting her. There's a knock on the bathroom door. Pirate is standing outside. Ha! Did you win?
2-0!
Nods Pirate blissfully. Because actually, I have only stayed in here all this time because you told me so. I have no intestinal problems, says Britt Marie, very seriously. Pirate nods in some confusion, mumbles, okay, and points at the front door, which is open.
Sven is here again.
The policeman stands on the threshold and lifts his hand in a fumbling wave. Britt Marie draws back, deeply affronted but not sure why, and closes the bathroom door behind her. Once she's fixed her hair properly, she takes a deep breath and re-emerges. Yes, she says to the policeman. The policeman smiles and holds out a piece of paper, which he drops just as he's giving it to Britt Marie.
Whoops! Oh, sorry, I just thought I'd give you this. Well, I thought, or we thought.
He makes a gesture towards the pizzeria. Britt Marie assumes he means he has spoken to somebody. He smiles again, clasps his hands together on top of his stomach, then changes his mind and crosses his arms just below his chin.
We were thinking you need somewhere to live, of course, and I understand you didn't want to stay at the hotel in town, not that you can't live anywhere you want to, of course. We just thought this might be a good alternative for you, perhaps.
Britt Marie looks at the paper. It's a handwritten, misspelled advertisement for a room that's available for rent. At the bottom is an image of a little man wearing a hat, who appears to be dancing. The relationship between the man and the advertisement is extremely unclear.
I'm the one who helped her make the ad, says the policeman enthusiastically. I did a course in it in town. She's a very nice lady, the one who's letting the room. I mean, she's just moved back to Borgor. I mean, it's just temporary, of course. She's selling the house, but it's here in Borg, not far at all. It's walkable, but I can give you a lift if you like.
Britt Marie's eyebrows inch closer together. There's a police car parked outside.
In that? Yes, I heard your car's at the workshop, but I can drive you. It's no trouble at all.
It's obviously not a problem for you. Whereas I'm supposed to be driven around this community in a police car, am I? So everyone thinks I'm a criminal.
Is that what you're telling me?
The policeman looks ashamed of himself.
No, of course you wouldn't want that. I certainly would not, says Britt Marie. Was there anything else?
He shakes his head despondently and turns to leave. Britt Marie closes the door. The children stay in the recreation centre until she has tumble-dried their clothes. Clothes that cannot be tumble-dried, she hangs up to dry, so the children can pick them up the day after. Most of them go home in their football jerseys. In a certain sense, this is how Britt Marie turns into their team coach. It's just that no one has told her about it yet. None of the children thank her for doing their laundry. The door closes behind them and the recreation centre is steeped in the sort of silence that only children and footballs can fill. Britt Marie puts away plates and soft drink cans from the sofa table. Omar and Vega have left their plates on the draining board. They haven't washed them up or put them in the dishwasher, haven't even rinsed them off. All they've done is put them there. Kent also used to do that sometimes, as if expecting to be thanked for it, as if he wanted Britt Marie to know that when the plate was back in its place, washed and dried, in the cupboard tomorrow, he had certainly done his allotted share of the task. There's a knock at the front door of the recreation centre. It's not a civilised hour, so Britt Marie assumes that it's one of the children who's forgotten something. She opens with a, "Huh?" Then she sees that it's the policeman standing outside again. He smiles awkwardly. Britt Marie immediately changes the tone to a "Ha!" which is something quite different, at least the way Britt Marie says it. The policeman swallows and seems to be drumming up some courage. A little too abruptly, he whips out a bamboo curtain, almost smacking it into Britt Marie's forehead.
"Sorry, yes, well, I just wanted to. This is a bamboo screen," he says,
and almost drops it into the mud. "Ha," says Britt Marie, more guarded now. He nods enthusiastically.
"I made it. I did a course in town. Far Eastern home design."
He nods again, as if Britt Marie is supposed to say something. She doesn't. He holds the bamboo screen in front of his face.
"You can hold it against the window so no one sees it's you."
He points cheerfully at the police car, then at the bamboo screen, then at the rain that has started falling again, as rain does in Borg, which must obviously be quite pleasant for the rain, not having anything better to do with its time.
"And you can keep it over your head when we go out to the car like an umbrella so you don't ruin your hair."
He swallows again and fingers the bamboo.
"You don't have to. Of course, I was just thinking that you have to live somewhere while you're in Borg, I was thinking, so to speak. Well, you understand that it's hardly suitable for a lady to live in a recreation centre, so to speak."
They stand in silence for a long time after that. Britt Marie switches her hands the other way, and then at long last exhales deeply with immeasurable patience, not at all a sigh. Then she says,
"I need to get my things."
He nods eagerly. She closes the door and leaves him out there in the rain. That is how it goes on, the thing that has started. Chapter 12. Britt Marie opens the door. He gives her the bamboo screen and she gives him the balcony boxes.
"I was told there was a large flat pack from IKEA in the back seat of your car. Should I load it into my car?"
he asks helpfully.
"You certainly shall not,"
answers Britt Marie, as if he had suggested setting fire to it.
Of course not," he says apologetically.
Britt Marie sees the men with the beards and caps leave the pizzeria. They nod at the policeman. He waves back. They seem not to see Britt Marie at all. The policeman hurries off towards his patrol car with the balcony boxes, then he hurries back to walk alongside Britt Marie. He doesn't hold her arm, but he does position his arm a few centimetres under hers without actually touching her, so he can catch her in case she slips. She holds the bamboo screen like an umbrella over her hair, because in fact bamboo screens work quite brilliantly as umbrellas, and keeps it in a firm grip over her head throughout the journey. So the policeman doesn't notice that her hairstyle has been ruined.
"I should like to stop by a cash machine on the way so I can pay for the room," she says. "If it's no bother to you, I obviously don't want to cause you any bother,"
she adds in a bothered tone of voice.
"It's no bother at all," says the policeman,
who seems free of any kind of bothered tendencies. He doesn't mention the fact that the nearest cash machine is actually a 20-kilometre detour. He talks all the way, just as Kent used to do when they were in the car. But it was different because Kent always told her things, whereas the policeman asks her questions. It irritates Britt Marie. You do get irritated by someone taking an interest in you when you're not used to it.
"What did you think of the match, then?"
he asks. "I was in the toilet," says Britt Marie. She gets incredibly irritated when she hears herself saying this, because anyone making hasty conclusions might believe she has serious intestinal problems. The policeman doesn't answer straight away, so she comes to the conclusion that he is indeed sitting there making hasty conclusions, and she doesn't at all appreciate that he's doing so. So she adds sharply,
"I actually don't have serious intestinal problems, but it was important for me to be in the toilet, otherwise apparently something would have gone wrong in the match."
He laughs. She doesn't know if it's at her expense. He stops when he notices that she doesn't much appreciate it.
"How did you end up here in Borg?"
"I was offered employment here." She has her feet semi-buried among empty pizza boxes and paper bags from the hamburger place. In the back seat is a painter's easel and a jumble of brushes and canvases.
"Do you like paintings?" the policeman asks her, in an upbeat mood, when he sees her looking at them.
"No."
He fidgets with embarrassment at the steering wheel.
"I mean, I don't mean my own paintings, of course. I'm just a bit of a happy amateur. I'm doing a course in watercolour painting in town. No, I mean paintings in general, real paintings, beautiful paintings."
There's something inside Britt Marie that wants to say, "Your paintings are also beautiful." But another more down-to-earth part of her answers in its place. "We don't have any paintings at home. Kent doesn't like art." The policeman gives her a silent nod. They drive into town, which is actually also more like a large village than a proper town. Similar to Borg, just a bit more of it. Heading in the same direction, but not as quickly. Britt Marie stops at a cash machine next to a tanning salon, which Britt Marie doesn't find so very hygienic, because she's read that solariums cause cancer, and you can hardly say cancer is hygienic. It takes a bit of time to get her money out, because she's so careful about hiding her code that she ends up pressing the wrong buttons. She's also hardly helped along by the fact that she still has a bamboo screen on top of her head. But the policeman doesn't tell her to hurry up. She realizes to her own surprise that she likes this. Kent always told her to hurry up, however quickly she was doing something. She gets back into the police car and starts feeling she ought to say something sociable. So she takes a deep breath and points at the empty takeaway boxes and bags on the floor and says,
"I don't suppose they were offering a cookery course in town?
Oh, no."
The policeman lights up.
"Yes, as a matter of fact, I did a sushi-making course. Have you ever made sushi?"
"Certainly not. Kent doesn't like foreign food."
"True, true. Well, there isn't much cooking when you make sushi, mainly just cutting, and I haven't done it so many times, actually, to be honest with you. I mean, since I did the course, it's not much fun cooking for yourself, if you understand what I mean."
He smiles with embarrassment. She doesn't smile at all.
"No," she says.
They drive back into Borg. Finally, the policeman seems to build up enough courage to bring up another subject.
"Well, anyway, it's nice of you to take on the youngsters like you have. Borg is not an easy place to grow up in these days. The young people need someone, as you know, to see them."
"I have not taken anyone on. They are certainly not my responsibility," protests Britt Marie.
"I didn't mean it like that, of course. I just mean they like you, the young people. I haven't seen them liking anyone since their last coach died."
"What do you mean they're last coach?"
I suppose I just mean they are very glad you moved here,"
says the policeman, opting for they, when really he would have preferred to say we, and then he asks,
"What did you do before you came here?"
Britt Marie doesn't answer. Instead, she glares out of the window at the houses they're passing. Outside almost every one of them, a for sale sign has been hammered into the lawn, so she states dryly,
"There don't seem to be many people living in Borg who want to stay in Borg."
The corners of the policeman's mouth do what the corners of mouths do when trying to overcome wistfulness.
"The financial crisis hit hard here after the trucking company laid off all the drivers. Those who have signs up are the ones who still have hopes of selling. The others have given up. Young people escape to the cities, and only the oldies like us stay on, because we're the only ones who still have jobs."
"The financial crisis is over. My husband told me that. He's an entrepreneur," Britt Marie informs him, keeping both her hair and the white mark on her ring finger well hidden under the bamboo screen.
He looks away awkwardly, while she firmly stares out of her window at a community in which even those who live there would rather not.
"And you're also keen on football, I understand," she says at last.
"I was once told that you love football because it's instinctive. If a ball comes rolling down the street, you give it a punt. You love it for the same reason that you fall in love, because you don't know how to avoid it."
The policeman smiles, slightly embarrassed. "Who made this suggestion?"
"The children's old coach said it once. Lovely, isn't it?"
"Ludicrous," says Britt Marie, although part of her wants to say poetic.
He grips the steering wheel even harder.
Probably so, probably so. I just mean that, I mean, everyone loves football, don't they, so to speak?
She doesn't say a word. They pass the corner shop, carry on for a few moments, then stop outside a small grey squat house built on two floors. In a garden on the other side of the road stand two women, who are so old that they look as if they lived in this community before it became a community. Leaning on their Zimmer frames, they cast suspicious glances at the police car. Sven waves at them as he and Britt Marie get out of the car. They do not wave back. It has stopped raining, but Britt Marie is still holding the bamboo screen over her hair. Sven rings the doorbell of the house. A blind woman, no less cube-shaped than the house itself, although Britt Marie would never dream of referring to her as fat, opens the door.
"Hi, Bank," says Sven cheerfully.
"Hello, Sven. So you've brought her along," says Bank, indifferently, waving her stick towards Britt Marie. "The rent for the room is 250 kroner a week, no credit. You can only rent it until I get the house sold," Bank goes on, grunting, and stomps back into the house without inviting them in.
Britt Marie enters behind her, slightly on her tiptoes because the floor is so dirty that she doesn't even want to walk on it in her shoes. The white dog lies in the hall, surrounded by carelessly packed removal crates in utter disarray. Britt Marie assumes this is all because of carelessness, not the fact that this Bank person is blind. Although Britt Marie doesn't have preconceived opinions, she's quite convinced that even blind people can be careless. All over the house are photos of a girl in a yellow football jersey, and in a few of them, she's standing next to the old man who is also in the photos at the recreation centre. In these pictures, he's younger. He must have been about Britt Marie's age when they found him on the kitchen floor in that house, Britt Marie realises. She doesn't know if that makes her old. She hasn't had so many people to compare herself to in recent years. Sven stands by the door with the balcony boxes and her bag in his arms. He's about the same age as her, and this feels rather old when she looks at him.
"We miss your dad very much, Bank. All of Borg misses him," he says wistfully into the hall.
Bank doesn't answer. Britt Marie doesn't know what to do, so she snatches the balcony boxes from Sven. He takes off his police cap, but remains on the threshold, as men of that kind always do, because as far as they're concerned, it is not appropriate to go inside a lady's home without an invitation. Britt Marie doesn't invite him in, although it irks her to see him standing there on her threshold in uniform. She sees the ancient women on the other side of the road, still standing in the garden glaring at them. What will the neighbours think? "Was there anything else?" she says, although what she really means is, "Thanks."
"No, no, nothing at all."
"Thank you," says Britt Marie, so that it sounds more like "goodbye" than "thanks." He nods awkwardly and turns around. When he's got halfway to the car, Britt Marie takes a deep breath and clears her throat, and only raises her voice a little.
"For the lift, I should like to... Well, what I'm saying is... I should like to thank you for the lift."
He turns around, and his whole face lights up. She quickly shuts the door before he gets any ideas. Bank goes up the stairs, seems to use the stick more as a sort of walking cane than for orienting herself. Britt Marie comes stumbling after with the balcony boxes and the bag in her arms.
"Toilet, wash basin, you'll have to eat somewhere else because I don't want the smell of frying in the house. Make yourself scarce in the daytime because that's when the estate agent brings buyers over."
She snorts and starts moving off towards the staircase. Britt Marie goes after her and says diplomatically,
"I should like to apologise for my behaviour earlier. I was unaware of your being blind."
Bank grunts something and tries to go downstairs. But Britt Marie hasn't finished.
"But I'd like to point out that you actually can't expect people to know you're blind when they have only seen you from behind," she says helpfully.
"God damn it, woman! I'm not blind!" roars Bank.
"Huh?
I have impaired vision. Close up, I can see just fine."
"How close?"
I can see where the dog is. The dog sees the rest, says Bank, pointing at the dog, about a metre away on the stairs.
Well, then, you're practically blind.
That's what I said. Good night.
I'm certainly not the sort of person who gets hung up on semantics. I really am not, but I did certainly hear you say blind.
Bank looks like someone weighing up the possibility of causing damage to the wall with the front of her head.
If I say I'm blind, people are too ashamed to ask any more questions and they leave me in peace. If I say I have impaired vision, they want to prattle on endlessly about the difference between that and being properly blind. Good night now, she concludes and moves on down the stairs.
Might I ask why you have a stick and a dog and sunglasses if you're not even blind?
My eyes are sensitive to light, and I had the dog before my eyes started playing up. It's a normal bloody dog. Good night.
The dog looks as if it's taken offence at this.
And the stick? Britt Marie asks.
It's not a blind stick, it's a walking cane. I have a bad knee, and it's also quite convenient when people don't get out of the way.
Ha!
Says Britt Marie. Bank shoves the dog out of the way with the cane.
Payment in advance, no credit, and I don't want to see you here in the daytime. Good night.
Could I ask when you expect to sell this house?
As soon as I find anyone balmy enough to want to live in Borg.
Britt Marie stands at the top of the stairs, which seem desolate and very steep as soon as Bank and the dog are out of sight. A moment later, the front door slams and the house drowns in the silence that follows. Britt Marie looks around. It's raining again. The police car is gone. A lone truck goes by, then more silence. Britt Marie feels cold on the inside. She takes the bedclothes off the bed and covers the mattress in bicarbonate of soda. She gets her list out of her bag. There's nothing on it. No items to tick. Darkness comes sweeping in through the window, enveloping Britt Marie. She doesn't turn on any lights. She finds a towel in her bag and weeps into it while standing up. She doesn't want to sit on the mattress until it's been properly cleaned. It's past midnight by the time she notices the door. It's next to one of the windows, facing out onto nothing. Britt Marie has difficulties at first, believing what she's seeing. She has to go and fetch a bottle of Faxin, then clean all the window glass in the door before she can even bring herself to touch the door handle. It's stuck. She pulls at it for all she's worth, wedges herself against the doorframe and uses her body weight, which admittedly isn't much. For a fleeting moment she sees the world through the glass and thinks about Kent and all the things he always said she couldn't do. And in that moment something makes her gather all her strength in a furious show of defiance that finally overpowers the door. She flies backwards through the room when the door opens wide. Rain falls in over the floor. Britt Marie sits leaning against the bed, breathing heavily and staring out. It's a balcony.
Chapter 13. A balcony can change everything. It's 6 in the morning and Britt Marie is enthusiastic. It's a new experience for her. Somebody's state of mind would rather have to be described as the hungover, irascible kind. Britt Marie has woken her by knocking on the door of the pizzeria at 6 o'clock to ask her, excitedly, for a drill. Somebody grudgingly opens up and informs Britt Marie that the pizzeria and all its other financial activities are closed at this time of day. Britt Marie then questions why somebody is there at all, because as far as Britt Marie can see, it can't possibly be hygienic to live in a pizzeria. Somebody explains as well as she can in her condition, eyes half closed with various scraps of food on her jersey that never quite made it to her mouth or for one reason or another came back out again, that she was too much drunk after the football match last night to make it home. Britt Marie nods appreciatively at this and says she thought this was a wise decision, because one really shouldn't drink and drive. She doesn't look at the wheelchair at all when she says it. Somebody mutters and tries to close the door, but, as we already said, Britt Marie is enthusiastic and will not be deterred.
for Britt-Marie now has somewhere to put her balcony boxes. Everything changes when you have somewhere to put your balcony boxes. Britt-Marie feels ready to take on the world, or at least Borg. Somebody doesn't seem to respond so very well to enthusiasm at 6 in the morning, so Britt-Marie asks if somebody happens to own an electric drill. And in fact, somebody does own one. She fetches it. Britt-Marie takes it with both hands and accidentally turns it on, and as a result of this, happens to drill somebody's hand just a little. Somebody then takes back the drill and demands to know what Britt-Marie was intending to do with the drill. Britt-Marie announces that she plans to put up a picture. So now somebody is in the recreation centre, hungover and a little irascible, with a drill in her hand. Britt-Marie stands in the middle of the room, looking enthusiastically at the picture. She found it in the recreation centre storage room early this morning, because Bank, as we know, had ordered her to make herself scarce in the house in the daytime, and in any case Britt-Marie was having trouble sleeping, what with all the emotions surfacing after the discovery of the balcony. The picture had been leaning up against the wall behind an unmentionable pile of rubbish, covered in a layer of dust so thick that it looked like volcanic ash. Britt-Marie took it inside the recreation centre and cleaned it with a damp rag and bicarbonate of soda. It looks very stylish now. "I've never put up a picture before, you have to understand," explains Britt-Marie very considerately, when she notices that somebody is looking exhausted. Somebody finishes her drilling and then hangs up the picture. It's not actually a painting, just a very, very old information chart with a black and white map of Borg. "Welcome to Borg," it says at the top. For someone who loathes travelling, Britt-Marie has always had a great love of maps. There's something reassuring about them, she's always found, ever since Ingrid used to speak to her at night about Paris when they were children. You can look at a map and point at Paris. Things are understandable when you can point at them. She nods, soberly, at somebody. "We don't have any pictures at home, me and Kent. You have to understand, Kent doesn't like art." Somebody raises her eyebrows at the information chart when Britt-Marie mentions art. "Could we possibly hang it a little higher?"
"Higher?
It's very low," Britt-Marie observes, obviously not in a critical way. Somebody looks at Britt-Marie. Looks at her wheelchair. Britt-Marie looks at the wheelchair too. "But obviously it's fine where it is also, obviously." Somebody mutters something best not heard by anyone and rolls off towards the door, back to the pizzeria, across the car park. Britt-Marie follows her because she needs Snickers and bicarbonate of soda. Inside, there's an overwhelming smell of cigarette smoke and beer. The tables are covered in dirty glasses and crockery. Somebody roots around behind the counter, grunting something to the effect of "headache tablets, where does Vega keep that shit?" She disappears into the kitchen. Britt-Marie is tentatively reaching for 2 dirty plates when somebody, as if she can sense what she's up to, yells,
"Don't touch washing up!"
Britt-Marie opens the cutlery drawer and starts arranging the cutlery in the right order. Somebody rolls forward and closes the cutlery drawer. Britt-Marie inhales patiently. "I'm just trying to make things look nice around here."
"Stop changing, I won't find a crap!"
Somebody explains when Britt-Marie turns her attention to the cupboard where drinking glasses are kept, not as if she's choosing to do it, but rather as if she has no choice. "It's quite extraordinary how you managed to find anything here at all," Britt-Marie informs her.
"You're putting in wrong place," somebody objects.
"Ha, ha, whatever I do is wrong, of course, isn't that always the case?" Somebody mumbles something incoherent, throws her arms up at the ceiling, as if it's the fault of the ceiling, and rolls out of the kitchen. Britt-Marie stays where she is and tries to stop herself from opening the cutlery drawer again. It works fairly well for about 15 seconds. When she goes out of the kitchen, she finds somebody sitting in the shop, eating fist-sized piles of cornflakes straight from the pack.
"You could at least use a plate," says Britt-Marie and fetches a plate.
Somebody, extremely displeased, eats fist-sized piles of cornflakes straight from the plate.
"I don't suppose you're having any natural yogurt with that, are you?"
I am, what's it called, lactose intolerant.
Huh, says Britt Marie, tolerantly, and rearranges a few cans on a shelf.
Please, Britt Marie, don't move shit, whispers somebody like you do when you have a severe headache.
You mean my cleaning is wrong as well, is that what you mean? Asks Britt Marie, and goes over to the till, where she starts sorting cartons of cigarettes into colour-coded piles.
Stop!
Somebody yells and tries to snatch them out of Britt Marie's hands. I'm only trying to make it a bit nice in here.
Not together,
whines somebody, and points at one brand of cigarettes with foreign letters on the cartons, and another that doesn't have foreign letters.
Because of tax authority,
says somebody, looking very serious as she points at the cartons with the foreign letters.
Flying stones.
Britt Marie looks like she needs something to grab hold of so she doesn't lose her balance.
You mean they're a contraband?
No, you know, Britt Marie, these fall off a lorry,
says somebody, apologetically.
That's illegal.
Somebody rolls back into the kitchen. She opens the cutlery drawer and swears very loudly. Then a long harangue follows in which Britt Marie can only make out,
Comes here for tomorrow drill and hang picture. I want to sleep, but oh no, I'm criminal. Mary Poppins out there is starting recreation centre and moving crap around.
Britt Marie stays in the demarcation area between the groceries and the pizzeria, rearranging cans and cigarette cartons. In actual fact, she only meant to buy some bicarbonate of soda and Snickers and then leave. But as it doesn't seem responsible to purchase bicarbonate of soda from someone who is clearly drunk, she has decided to wait until somebody sobers up. Somebody seems to have decamped to the kitchen, so in the meantime Britt Marie does what she always does in these types of situations. She cleans. It looks quite decent when she's finished, it really does. Unfortunately, there are no flowers, but there is a vase on the counter next to the till, with a white piece of tape stuck to it, where someone has written, Tips. It's empty. Britt Marie washes it out and puts it back, next to the till. Then she gets all the coins out of her handbag and drops them in. She tries to make them look fluffy, as if they were potting soil. By the time she's finished, the vase looks a good deal more decorative. Maybe you wouldn't develop so many allergies if you kept things a little more hygienic in here, she explains considerately to somebody when somebody comes out of the kitchen. Somebody massages her temples, spins the wheelchair around and disappears back into the kitchen. Britt Marie keeps working on the coins in the vase to make them look even more decorative. The front door tinkles and the two men with beards and caps step inside. They also look hungover.
I have to ask you to wipe your feet outside, Britt Marie informs them at once. I've just mopped the floor, you see.
They look bemused, but comply.
Ha! How can we help you?
Asks Britt Marie when they come back in.
Coffee?
The men manage to say and look around as if they've stepped into a parallel dimension where there's a pizzeria just the same as the one where they usually drink their coffee, except this one is clean. Britt Marie nods and goes into the kitchen. Somebody is sleeping with a can of beer in her hand and her head resting in the cutlery drawer. Britt Marie cannot find any tea towels, so she takes two kitchen rolls, carefully lifts somebody's head, and pushes the kitchen rolls into the cutlery drawer as cushions, onto which she gently lowers somebody's head. She makes coffee in an entirely normal coffee percolator unaffected by flying stones and serves this to the men with caps and beards. Stands there by their table for a while in the vague hope that one of them might say that the coffee's decent. Neither of them does.
Ha! Are you intending to solve the crossword?
The men stare at her as if she's just addressed them without using vowels, then go back to their newspapers. Britt Marie nods helpfully.
If you don't have the intention of solving it, may I?
The men look a little as if she's asked whether they're planning on using their kidneys in the foreseeable future. Or if she can take them.
Who are you, anyway?
Asks one of the men.
I'm Britt Marie.
Are you from the city?
Yes,
she smiles. The men nod as if this explains everything.
Buy your own bloody newspaper, then,
says one of them. The other grunts in agreement.
Ha!
Says Britt Marie,
and decides not to offer them a top-up. Somebody keeps sleeping in the kitchen. Possibly it is Britt Marie's fault because she's made her too comfortable, but nonetheless Britt Marie feels obliged to take care of the customers until Vega comes in. Not that there's a particularly large number of customers, or any at all, you might say, if you were being pedantic about it. The only one who comes in is the ginger-haired boy whose name is Pirate, even though that's not a name. He diffidently asks if Britt Marie has time to do his hair. She informs him that she is terribly busy right now. He nods, excited, and waits in a corner.
"If you're just going to stand there, you may as well help out," says Britt Marie, eventually.
He nods so eagerly it's a wonder he doesn't bite his tongue. Vega shows up. She stops in the doorway and looks as if she's come to the wrong place.
"What's happened here?"
she pants, as if the pizzeria has been burgled in the night by a group of pedants who have cleaned it up as a way of making a political statement.
"What are you trying to say?" says Britt Marie, a bit offended. "It's so clean."
She heads for the kitchen, but Britt Marie stops her.
"She's sleeping in there."
Vega shrugs.
"She's hung over. She always is when the football's been on."
Carl, who always seems to have some parcel to pick up, walks in.
"Can we be of assistance?" asks Britt Marie, in every way mindful of providing good service, without any hint of incrimination.
"I'm picking up a parcel,"
says Carl, not at all mindful of anyone's good service. His sideburns reach all the way to his chin, Britt Marie notes. They look like snowdrops. One of Britt Marie's favourite flowers, except in his case the snowdrops are upside down.
"We haven't had any parcels today," says Vega.
"I'll wait then," says Carl, and goes over to the cap-wearing men. "And obviously you are not ordering yourself anything? You're just going to sit here?" says Britt Marie in a thoroughly, thoroughly friendly way. Carl stops. The men at the table look at him, as if to clarify that, as far as they're concerned, he should not be negotiating with terrorists.
"Coffee," Carl rumbles at last.
Pirate is already on his way with the jug. The next person who steps inside is Sven. A smile lights up his round little face when he catches sight of Britt Marie.
"Hello, Britt Marie!
Wipe your shoes."
He nods eagerly, goes outside and then comes back inside again.
"Nice to see you here," he says.
"Huh. Are you working today?" asks Britt Marie.
"Yes, yes, of course, of course," he nods.
"It's not so easy knowing you seem to keep your uniform on whether you're working or not," says Britt Marie,
not at all critically. Sven doesn't entirely look as if he's sure what she's talking about. Instead, his gaze alights on what is clearly a foreign carton of cigarettes, left on the counter next to the till after somebody and Britt Marie's argument about smuggling.
"Interesting letters, those?" he says inquiringly.
Britt Marie and Vega's eyes meet, and the girl's sense of panic transmits back.
"Those are mine,"
Britt Marie exclaims and snatches up the cigarettes.
"Oh,"
says Sven, surprised.
"It's certainly no crime to smoke,"
says Britt Marie, although she certainly thinks it ought to be. Then she makes herself exceedingly, exceedingly busy with rearranging a shelf in the grocery section.
"Has everything worked out with the room at Banks?" asks Sven behind her.
But to Britt Marie's relief is interrupted by Vega groaning.
"No, not him."
Britt Marie looks out of the window. A BMW has stopped in the parking area. Britt Marie knows that because Kent has a BMW. The door makes a tinkling sound and a man more or less the same age as somebody and a boy more or less the same age as Vega come walking in. It's unclear which one of them Vega doesn't want to see. The man is wearing a very expensive jacket. Britt Marie knows this because Kent has one just the same. The boy is wearing a beaten-up tracksuit top on which the name of the town 20 kilometres away is written, followed by the word hockey. He looks at Vega with interest and she looks at him with contempt. The man smiles jeeringly at the men in the corner and they look back at him as if hoping that by doing so they'll eventually set him on fire. He looks away and starts jeering at Vega instead.
"Frantic business activity here as usual."
"Why?
Are you here to give someone the sack?"
Vega answers acidly. Then, pretending to have suddenly realized something, slaps her forehead dramatically.
Oh, no, that's right, you can't, because you don't work here, and where you work there's no one left to sack, because you already sacked them all.
The man's eyes go black. The boy looks spectacularly uncomfortable. The man thumps two soft drink cans on the counter. 24 kroner, says Vega, indifferently.
We're having pizzas as well,
says the man, trying to regain the upper hand.
The pizzeria is closed, says Vega.
What do you mean?
The pizza baker is temporarily out of order. The man snivels disdainfully and slaps a 500 kroner note on the counter.
A pizzeria without pizzas seems a pretty effective business venture you have here.
A bit like a trucking company with one manager and no drivers, Vega responds sarcastically. The man clenches his fist on the counter, but from the corner of his eye he sees Carl getting out of his chair, though the other two men are doing their best to make him sit back down.
I'm 6 kroner short here, he says grimly at Vega, after examining the change she's flung back.
We don't have any coins left, Vega says through her teeth.
Sven is standing beside them now. He looks unsure of himself.
It might be best if you leave now, Friedrich, he says.
The man's gaze moves from Vega to the policeman. It stops on the vase where the tips are kept.
No problem, he says, his face cracking open in a scornful smile,
as he stuffs his hand into the vase and fishes out 6 kroner. He grins at Sven, then at the boy with the ice hockey tracksuit top. The boy looks down at the floor and walks back to the door. Sven stays where he is, beaten. The man with the expensive jacket makes eye contact with Britt Marie.
Who are you? Asks the man.
I work at the recreation centre, says Britt Marie, glaring at the fingertips on the newly polished vase for the tips.
I thought the council had closed it down. Bloody waste of taxpayers' money, if you ask me. Invest them in juvenile detention centres. That's where the kids end up anyway.
Britt Marie looks helpful. My husband has a jacket like that, she says.
Your husband has good taste, says the man with a grin.
Except his is the right size, says Britt Marie. There's a long, long silence. Then Vega first and Sven after burst into peals of laughter. Britt Marie can't think what they're laughing about. The boy runs out. The man marches behind him and slams the door so hard that the fluorescent tube up on the ceiling flickers. The BMW does a wheel spin as it leaves the parking area. Britt Marie doesn't know where to look. Sven and Vega are still laughing loudly, which makes her uncomfortable. She assumes it must be at her expense, so she also hurries towards the door. I have time for your hair now, she whispers to Pirate, and then flees across the parking area. The door closes with a merry tinkling. Chapter 14. All marriages have their bad sides because all people have weaknesses. If you live with another human being, you learn to handle these weaknesses in a variety of ways. For instance, you might take the view that weaknesses are a bit like heavy pieces of furniture, and based on this, you must learn to clean around them to maintain the illusion. Of course, the dust is building up unseen, but you learn to repress this for as long as it goes unnoticed by guests. And then one day someone moves a piece of furniture without your say-so, and everything comes into plain view. Dirt and scratch marks, permanent damage to the parquet floor. By then, it's too late. Britt Marie stands in the bathroom at the recreation centre, looking at all of her worst sides in the mirror. She's afraid, she's fairly certain this is her worst side. More than anything, she'd like to go home. Iron Kent shirts and sit on her own balcony. More than anything, she'd like everything to go back to normal.
Do you want me to leave?
Asks Pirate anxiously from the doorway.
I'm not going to tolerate your laughing at me, says Britt Marie, with all the strictness she can summon. Why would I laugh at you? Asks Pirate.
She sucks in her cheeks without answering, hesitant,
He holds out a carton of cigarettes with foreign lettering.
Sven said you forgot this.
Britt Marie takes it, dismayed. Contraband, which she has now either stolen or bought on credit, depending on how positively you want to look at it. This is all highly vexatious, because Britt Marie is not even sure now what sort of criminal she is. But there's no doubt that she's a criminal, although Kent would certainly agree with somebody that there's nothing criminal about withholding cigarettes from the tax authorities and the police.
Get over it, darling. It's not cheating if you don't get caught, he always used to say when she was signing off her tax return.
And she asked what all those other pieces of paper were that Kent's accountant had slipped into the envelope.
Don't worry, they're completely legal tax deductions. Get on with it, he'd say reassuringly.
Kent loved deductions and loathed tax bills. Britt Marie never dared admit to him that she did not understand the rights and wrongs of it. Pirate gently touches her shoulder.
They weren't laughing at you. In the pizzeria, I mean. They were laughing at Friedrich. He was the boss at the trucking company when they all got fired, so they don't like him.
Britt Marie nods and tries to look as if, in fact, she hadn't been especially worried about it in the first place. Pirate seems encouraged by this response because he goes on.
Friedrich trains the hockey team in town. They're wicked. The tall one who was with him in the pizzeria is his son. He's as old as me, but he's almost got a beard already. You get that? Sick, isn't it? He's wicked at football as well, but Friedrich wants him to play hockey because he thinks hockey's better.
Why on earth does he think that? Asks Britt Marie. Because on the basis of her slight knowledge of hockey, it seems to her one of the few things in the universe that is more ludicrous than football.
Probably because it's expensive. Friedrich likes things that most people can't afford, says Pirate.
Why are you so dreadfully amused by football, then? Asks Britt Marie. Pirate seems to find the question mystifying.
What do you mean? People like football just because they like football, that's all.
Ludicrous, thinks Britt Marie, but she buttons up. Instead, she points to a bag in the boy's hand.
What's that? Scissors and a comb and products and stuff, says the boy, blissfully.
Britt Marie doesn't ask what he means by products, but she notes that he has a heck of a lot of jars anyway. She fetches a stool from the kitchen, puts down towels on the floor and gestures for him to take a seat. Then she washes his hair and cuts the uneven bits. She used to do that for Ingrid. Suddenly words come tumbling out of her. She can't understand why on earth she had to open her mouth, but...
From time to time I feel unsure whether people are laughing at me or something else, you must understand. My husband says I don't have a sense of humour.
She is quickly silenced by her common sense. Embarrassed, she clamps her lips together. The boy stares at her in the mirror with consternation.
That's a horrific thing to say to someone.
Britt Marie doesn't answer, but she agrees. It is a horrific thing to say to someone.
Do you love him, your husband?
Asks the boy so suddenly that Britt Marie almost snips him in the ear. She brushes down his shoulder with the back of her hand, buries her gaze in his scalp.
Yes. Why isn't he here, then?
Because sometimes love isn't enough. Then they remain silent until Britt Marie has finished cutting, and Pirate's unruly washing-up brush has been tenderly coaxed into a hairstyle as neat as biological circumstances will allow. He stays where he is, admiring himself in the mirror. Britt Marie cleans up and looks out into the parking area. Two young men are standing there, neither of them even 20 years old, smoking and leaning against a big black car. They're wearing the same kind of jeans, ripped across the thighs as the children in the football team. But these two are no children. They look like the sort of young men who would make Britt Marie take a firmer grip on her handbag while passing. Not that she judges people, not at all, but one of these men actually has tattoos on his hands.
That's Sammy and Psycho, says Pirate, behind her.
He sounds scared.
Those are not names,
Britt Marie informs him.
Sammy is a name, I think. But Psycho is called Psycho because he's a psycho, says Pirate quietly, as if he doesn't dare utter their names too loudly.
I don't suppose they have jobs to go to.
Pirate shrugs.
No one here has a job, apart from some really old people.
Britt Marie puts one hand in the other, then the other in the one, while trying not to be offended.
The one on the right has tattoos on his hands, she notes. That's psycho. He's mad. Sammy's all right, but psycho's, you know, he's dangerous. You have to avoid any trouble with him. My mother says I'm not allowed in Vega and Omar's house when psycho's there.
Why on earth would he be in Vega and Omar's house?
Sammy is their older brother.
The door of the pizzeria opens. Vega emerges with two pizzas and hands them to Sammy. He kisses her on the cheek. Psycho grins insolently at her. She looks at him as if she just bought a new bag and he vomited in it. Then he slams the door. The black car pulls out of the parking area.
They don't eat in the pizzeria when Sven's there, Vega said. They're not allowed to, explains Pirate.
Ha, huh, quite understandable. Because she knows they're worried about the police, of course.
No, because she knows the police are afraid of them.
Societies are like people in that way. If you don't ask too many questions and don't shift any heavy furniture around, there's no need to notice their worst sides. Britt Marie brushes down her skirt. Then she brushes Pirate's sleeve. She'd like to change the subject, and without further ado, he helps her out.
Has Vega asked you yet?
About what? Asks Britt Marie.
If you want to be our coach?
Absolutely not.
Extremely offended, she cups one hand into the other and asks, anyway, what does that mean?
I mean a trainer, we have to have one. There's a challenge cup in town. You can only enter if you have a team with a coach.
A cup? Like a competition?
Like a cup?
In this weather outdoors, that's ludicrous.
No, I mean it's an indoor competition in a sports centre in town, says Pirate.
Britt Marie is about to say a few choice words about the sort of people who like to kick balls around indoors when there's a knock on the door. A boy is standing outside, of about the same age as Pirate. Long-haired, one might also add.
Huh,
says Britt Marie.
Is Ben like here? Asks the boy.
It seems fairly unclear what the meaning of like is in the construction of the sentence, as if the boy just asked, is Ben almost here?
Who?
Asks Britt Marie.
Ben, or like what they call him in his team, Pirate.
Ha!
Ha ha! He is here, but he's occupied, says Britt Marie firmly and is about to close the door. With what sort of thing?
Asks the boy.
He's meeting someone, or he has a date, or whatever it's called. I know! With me!
Says the boy with a frustrated groan. Britt Marie, who is not encumbered with any prejudice, puts one hand in the other and says,
Ha!
The boy is chewing gum. She dislikes that. It's actually quite all right to dislike chewing gum, even if you are a person without any prejudices.
It's like epically lame seeing it date, says the boy. It was Ben who said it. In my time we said meeting, says Britt Marie, defending herself.
Also epically lame, snorts the boy.
What do you say then?
Asks Britt Marie, just a touch critically.
Nothing, just out sort of thing, says the boy.
I have to ask you to wait here, says Britt Marie and firmly closes the door. Pirate stands in the bathroom fixing his hair. He starts jumping up and down on the spot when he sees her in the mirror.
Is he here? Isn't he fantastic?
He's strikingly rude, says Britt Marie, but Pirate obviously can't hear anything because the sound of his jumping echoes quite a lot in the bathroom. Britt Marie takes a piece of toilet paper, carefully picks her hair off Pirate's jumper, and folds it into the toilet paper, then flushes it down the toilet. I was under the impression that you went on dates with girls.
I do go on dates with girls, sometimes, says Pirate.
But this is a boy, says Britt Marie.
This is a boy, confirms Pirate with a nod, as if they're playing some sort of parlour game, the rules of which have not been explained to him.
Ah, says Britt Marie.
Do you have to decide on one or the other?
I know nothing about that. I don't have any prejudices about it, Britt Marie assures him.
Pirate adjusts his hair, smiles and asks,
do you think he'll like my hair?
Britt Marie doesn't seem to have heard his question, and instead she says,
"Your friends in the football team obviously don't know that you go on dates with boys. Obviously, I won't mention it."
Pirate looks surprised.
"Why wouldn't they know?"
"Have you told them?"
"Why wouldn't I have told them?"
"What did they say?"
"They said, okay."
Then he looks unsure.
"What else should they have said?"
"Ha! Ha! Obviously nothing, obviously," says Britt Marie in a way you could describe as not at all defensive, and then adds, "I have no prejudices about this."
"I know," says Pirate.
Then he smiles nervously.
"Is my hair looking nice?"
Britt Marie can't quite bring herself to answer, so she just nods. She picks off one last hair from his jumper and awkwardly holds it in her hand. He hugs her. She can't think why on earth he would get it into his head to do such a thing.
"You shouldn't be alone. It's a waste when someone whose hair looks as nice as yours is alone," he whispers.
He's almost at the door when Britt Marie, still holding his hair in her hand, collects herself, clears her throat, and whispers back. "If he doesn't say your hair is looking lovely, then he doesn't deserve you." Pirate turns around, runs back through the room and hugs her again. She pushes him away, friendly but firm, because one mustn't forget one's boundaries. He asks her if he can borrow her mobile phone. She looks doubtful and warns him not to run up a large bill. He takes it, dials his own number, lets it ring once, then hangs up. Then he tries to embrace her again, laughs when she squirms, and runs off. The door closes. 15 minutes later, Britt Marie gets a text message.
"He said it!"
The recreation center goes quiet around her. She vacuums up all the hair from the floor just to make some noise, washes and tumble dries the towels. Then she dusts all the pictures, taking extra care with the information chart and map, which somebody hung a meter lower than all the other frames. She removes the wrapper from a Snickers bar, puts it on a plate, puts the plate on a towel, and leaves it on the threshold. Opens the front door. Sits for a long time on her stool, trying to feel the wind in her hair. At long last, she picks up the telephone.
"Hello,"
says the girl at the unemployment office. Britt Marie inhales deeply.
"It was impolite of me to say that you had a boy's hairstyle."
"Britt Marie?" Britt Marie swallows with concentration.
"Obviously, I shouldn't have got involved in that. I mean, the sort of hairstyle you have, or if you go out on dates with boys or girls, not at all."
"You didn't mention anything about that."
"Ha, ha, ha. It's not beyond the realm of possibility that I just thought it may be so. In either case, it was impolite of me,"
says Britt Marie irritably.
"What? But I mean, what do you mean by what's wrong with my hairstyle?"
"Nothing at all, that's what I'm saying," insists Britt Marie.
I don't like,"
says the girl defensively in a slightly overbearing voice.
"That's not for me to stick my nose into. I mean, not that, you know, there's anything wrong with being that way, or not,"
the girl persists.
"I certainly haven't said anything of the kind."
"Nor me,"
protests the girl.
"Well then," says Britt Marie.
"Absolutely," says the girl.
There's such a long silence between them that at long last the girl says,
"Hello,"
because she thinks Britt Marie has hung up. And that's when Britt Marie hangs up. The rat is 1 hour and 6 minutes late for dinner. It rushes in and lunges at the biggest possible piece of Snickers that it could carry, stops for a second and stares at Britt Marie, then runs back outside into the darkness. Britt Marie wraps the rest of the chocolate in plastic cling film and puts it in the fridge, washes up the plate, washes and tumble dries the towel, and hangs it in its place. Through the window she sees Sven emerging from the pizzeria. He stops by the police car and looks over at the recreation center. Britt Marie hides behind the curtain. He gets in the car and drives off. For a short moment she was afraid he was going to come over and knock on the door. Then she got disappointed when he didn't. She turns off all the lights except in the bathroom. The sheen of the lone light bulb finds its way out from under the door and lights up the exact area of the wall where somebody hung up the